This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Rwanda, on the other hand, is a different environment altogether. Number one, this country already has questionable human rights records. So the British court did the right thing in terms of, from a liberalist perspective, of ensuring and guaranteeing the safety and the rights of those asylum seekers.
That's Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, on Britain's Supreme Court ruling today that the government's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda was unlawful. Details coming up also. Ballot counting is underway in Liberia after yesterday's runoff presidential election. And we get the latest on the Israel-Hamas conflict. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. 2.5 weeks after sending troops into northern Gaza, Israeli forces entered the enclave of Al-Shifa Hospital today, saying that Hamas militants operate out of the facility. Hamas and hospital workers deny the allegation. Mohammed Zakut, the director of hospitals in Gaza, said Israeli tanks were inside the medical compound and that soldiers had entered buildings, including the emergency and surgery departments. International aid workers say hundreds of patients, medical workers, and displaced people are still in the hospital's buildings. Also today, the head of the UN Relief Agency for Palestinian Refugees confirmed it has received 23,000 liters of fuel that crossed into Gaza from Egypt. The agency, however, said much more is needed and warns without more fuel, by tomorrow, 70% of Gaza's 2.3 million people will be without clean water. Israel has allowed only limited supplies of food, fuel, and medical supplies into Gaza since Hamas militants attacked Israeli communities on October the 7th. More than 1,200 people were killed in the attack, and Hamas took more than 240 hostages back to Gaza. Since then, more than 12,000 Gaza residents are thought to have been killed as Israel has bombarded the enclave and launched its ground incursion. For more on the latest about the conflict, we have reporter Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem standing by. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you, Yehia.
So what are you hearing about the Israeli Defense Forces search of the Al-Shifa Hospital?
Well, the Israeli army says that they did find weapons in the medical center. They found all these machine guns, which, and they say, you know, proves that Hamas did use it. They did not find any hostages. I think they were sort of hoping that there were hostages being held underneath the hospital. Another thing is that the former head of USAID, the Agency of International Development in Gaza, said just a few minutes ago on X, writing in a thread, that it was well known that Hamas terrorists used Shifa Hospital as a command center and used ambulances to travel. Israel is concerned about the humanitarian issue. It actually brought incubators with the soldiers to evacuate the premature babies. But, of course, Hamas says that a lot of civilians have been killed in the Israeli assault on the hospital. Israel has, you know, waited to go into the hospital knowing that it was going to cause, you know, problems both in terms of civilians and in terms of international public opinion.
And the Israeli army says it will temporarily suspend military activities as it reopens an evacuation passage for Gaza residents. What is the status of aid shipments into Gaza from Egypt's Rafah crossing? Are more trucks getting in?
Yes, Israel says more trucks are getting in. The way the trucks, what happens, by the way, is they come to Rafah. And then they're brought into Israel where they're inspected. Then they go back to the Rafah crossing, and they come into Gaza through that Rafah crossing. Israel has said it will not allow aid to come directly from Israel, but, of course, it wants to inspect all of the aid. That said, it seems that in the last few days there has been more food and medicine getting in. Today, for the first time, Israel allowed fuel into Gaza. And that's something, as you said in the introduction, and the reason that a lot of the hospitals had shut down is they said that they didn't have fuel to run the hospitals. So I think, you know, Israel says that its you know, fight is not with the civilians of Gaza, it's with Hamas. And Israeli officials say that they are, you know, tightening their control over Gaza and has called on Hamas to surrender.
Any movement on the hostage front?
Well, in fact, yes. I mean, there supposedly is a deal that Qatar is trying to arrange in which 50 of the hostages, mostly women and children, would be released in exchange for a 3-day ceasefire. And the reports, at least coming from Israel, is that those negotiations are making quite a bit of progress. By the way, there's one woman who supposedly, if she's still alive, gave birth in captivity in Gaza.
And lastly, Linda, U.S. public support, according to some polls and some reports, U.S. public support for Israel's war against Hamas militants in Gaza is eroding. And most Americans think Israel should call a ceasefire to a conflict that has ballooned into a humanitarian crisis.
Yes, that's true. But I think Israel is more concerned about what President Biden says and less about American public opinion. Now, obviously, you know, American public opinion can influence President Biden. But yesterday, the president said that they believe, you know, Israel's contention that Hamas was using hospitals as weapon centers and basically using the people in those hospitals as human shields. So until you start getting pressure from, you know, the United States to call for a ceasefire, and there's been definitely a change where in the first weeks after the, you know, October 7th, when Hamas killed all of those, you know, Israeli civilians, there was a lot of sympathy from President Biden came here, if you remember. And now, you know, there are warnings from Secretary Blinken, who said too many civilians have died, and President Biden urging Israel to be careful. Israel's foreign minister, who was in Geneva yesterday speaking to, you know, officials, said that he believes Israel has 2 to 3 weeks before the international pressure will become very, very large. So Israel wants to sort of finish the military part of this afterwards. However, what happens after that, let's say that Israel succeeds in its goal of getting rid of Hamas, who is going to take control of Gaza? That nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Reporter Linda Grandstein actually updating us with the latest from the region. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
That was Dashti Jamal, General Secretary of the International Federation of Iraqi Refugees in London, chanting with other protesters outside Britain's Supreme Court after it ruled against government plans to send migrants to Rwanda. A 5-judge panel at the UK's highest court sided with Court of Appeal judges that the policy did not meet Britain's obligations under international treaties and put deported migrants at risk of persecution known as refoulement.
The legal test which has to be applied in this case is whether there are substantial grounds for believing that asylum seekers sent to Rwanda would be at real risk of refoulement. In the light of the evidence which I have summarised, the Court of Appeal concluded that there were such grounds. We are unanimously of the view that they were entitled to reach that conclusion. Indeed, having been taken through the evidence ourselves, we agree with their conclusion.
Taufik Hussein, a solicitor representing asylum seekers, praised the court ruling.
This judgment and this victory is a victory for our brave clients who stood up to what is an unlawful and an inhumane policy. Today it's not just a victory for them, but it's a victory for the rule of law. It's a reminder that no one is above the law.
The ruling was a blow to the goals of Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. The policy of sending undocumented migrants to Rwanda had been key to his immigration policy ahead of an election expected next year. In Parliament today, Sunak said the court overall said it is legal to send asylum seekers to a safe third country. He also said his government already is working on a new treaty with Rwanda to meet court requirements and would consider other measures if needed.
But let me say this again. If it becomes clear that our domestic legal frameworks or international conventions are still frustrating plans at that point, I am prepared to change our laws and revisit those international relationships. The British people expect us to do whatever it takes to stop the boats, and that is precisely what this government will deliver.
Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. After becoming Britain's Prime Minister a year ago, Sunak made stopping the boats one of his top five priorities. The plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda struck in April 2022 by then Prime Minister Boris Johnson was designed to deter people from making the dangerous journey of about 32 kilometers across the channel from Europe in small boats to England's southern beaches. Dr. Edgar Gitua, international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, tells me he agrees with the Supreme Court decision.
My take on that is that the Supreme Court has ruled correctly because it sees Britain abrogating its role or refusing to take responsibility for what it should. These asylum seekers have come to the UK. That is where they think their issues will be dealt with. That's where they think their human rights issues and their safety is guaranteed. Rwanda, on the other hand, is a different environment altogether. Number one, this country already has questionable human rights records. So the British court did the right thing in terms of, from a liberalist perspective, of ensuring and guaranteeing the safety and the rights of those asylum seekers who, under international law, should be guaranteed safety and security.
So what are the government's options now?
The UK government has no option but to offer them asylum, provide them, create for them that safe space until now. It now decides what else to do with them. Is it going to hold them in transit? For example, right now, some of its options, in my view, would be keep them there as it helps them to process for them to go to other countries who are willing to accept them. If the UK government is not willing to accept them, let it hold them as they process papers to go to another destination. But sending them to a venue in a country where they are not comfortable, and probably some of them even came from regions that are neighboring countries to that area, that was discriminatory in the first place. In as much as the Rwandan government had agreed, of course they were going to get paid for it, but that was not right under international law.
Last year, a record of 45,775 people were detected arriving without permission in Britain. And so far this year, more than 27,000 have arrived on small boats. Why is immigration such an issue in Britain?
It's not only Britain, thank you, but it's not only Britain. It's also Europe in general. Okay, it's Europe in general. Remember, we still have the Tunisia-Morocco issue with Spain. So it is a lot of these immigrants are trying to get greener pastures. They are, let's call them, some are economic refugees. They're trying to get a better life. Immigration issues are big issues for countries like the UK because, number one, of the security issue around it. All nation states protect their borders, try to vet and determine who comes onto their soil. So in this case, it's an immigration nightmare because when they come in such big numbers, you do not know who you are admitting into your own soil. That is, the security is the first perspective. The second perspective is economic. These refugees and all these illegal immigrants will eventually come and become part of the labor force of the country. and they will provide cheap labor, thus rendering bona fide UK citizens and British citizens jobless. So it is also an economic nightmare. It's an economic issue. And it is a political issue because once the British start feeling like their jobs are being taken, they will vote out MPs, they will vote out the Prime Minister, they're going to vote out the government that is in power that is allowing this. So if you look at it holistically, the UK government is trying to protect itself from a security perspective, an economic perspective, and the political survival of the government and the regime in power, because they know they will be voted out by angry citizens who will say, you're allowing in illegal immigrants from either Eastern Europe or Africa or wherever else, and they are coming to take our jobs. So it's about survival. It's about regime survival as well.
That was Dr. Edgar Gituwa, International Relations Security and Diplomatic Expert at the U.S. International University. He spoke with me from Nairobi. Ballot counting is underway in Liberia after yesterday's runoff election between President George Weah and former Vice President Joseph Boakai in what was expected to be a closely fought vote. Turnout appeared lighter than during the first round of voting, which had a turnout of 79% or of around 2.4 million registered voters. Reporter Denise Nimpson in Monrovia spoke to me earlier today about where things stand.
Counting is on the way in the 15 counties of Liberia as of the election that was held on yesterday across Monrovia. So the counting process is on the way. Currently, Liberians are waiting for the National Elections Commission to start announcing preliminary results as it relates to their votes that were cast on yesterday.
And Denise, you told me yesterday that turnout appeared lighter in Monrovia, the capital, compared with the first round of voting.
The turnout was low, yes, like I said, and it's not only in Monrovia, but across the country. It was noticed that, observed that the turnout has been low during the voting process because most of the people in the election, it was the general election. So you realize that now that you have the runoff election, that is just a presidential runoff election, without members of the legislature being part of it, that also could contribute to the low turnout. Another factor could be that Liberians are a bit tired, perhaps, of the process, so they decide to sit back and just watch the process. So many were not encouraged any longer to go to the polls to elect whosoever should serve as the president for the next 6 years.
Yes, and you know, the first round of the election, we saw a record turnout of 79% of around 2.4 million registered voters. Have any of the candidates talked during this period of the runoff? Has anyone claimed any victory?
Yes, the supporters of both candidates currently on the social media, both candidates, their supporters are claiming early victory. According to them, they have their war rooms that they are looking at. They are having their talent process and they are winning. So both sides are claiming victory that they have won the election. And currently you have a supporter of the Unity Party, one of the representative elect who is representative Yeke Koluba. So they took to the street to claim early victory with supporters of Unity Party by raiding the streets, celebrating that they have won the election. And also the ruling establishment, the incumbent, his supporters as well are on the social media like the Unity Party, claiming that they have won the election, and they are all just waiting for the final official pronouncement from the National Elections Commission as it relates to their side of winning the election.
And Denise, this vote, this runoff in many ways is a test of Weah's popularity. He has, as you know, a cult-like support in many areas, inspired by his rise from a Monrovia slum to international soccer stardom. And then Boakai, who lost to Weah in the 2017 election, has campaigned on the need to rescue the nation from what he calls mismanagement by WIA's administration.
Sure, all of these factors are very significant to the process because WIA being a soccer legend that has contributed to him becoming the president. Now we're standing despite the 6th year with criticism from the opposition that there's hardship across the country due to his administration. The popularity that he has from the soccer field that has landed him the presidency is still with some of his supporters. And also Ambassador Boakai as the former vice president who has served over 40 years in government from director, managing director to agriculture minister in the 70s, 80s, and during the Manasseh Leaf administration. That also has given him some leverage in terms of support from Liberians who see him as a seasoned politician.
That was reporter Denise Nimpson on Liberia's runoff election. She talked to me from Monrovia. The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Felix Tshisekedi, addressed the nation to take stock of his 5 years in power and ask the Congolese people to renew their confidence in him for a second term. Zanem Neti Zaidi reports from Goma.
Félix Antoine Tshisekedi's address to the two chambers of parliament has been widely commented on by people living in the eastern part of the DRC. Josette Maarifa, a resident of the capital of North Kivu, Goma, says that it is an address of what has been done by the Congolese head of state without taking into account the impact of actions on the ground. He says that the president has talked about what he calls his achievements, but he hasn't talked about their impact today on the population. Jansent thinks this is dangerous when evaluating policy decisions. Success means having an impact on local communities. It's a point of view shared by several society groups in Goma. Its leader, Divin Ombeni, says he is not happy to see that Felix Tshisekedi has failed to give the Congolese government's position on the war against militias in the east that is destabilizing the country. At the United Nations, in Western countries, when the president speaks, he denounces the aggression of neighboring countries, but he is shocked to see that in his own country, the president says nothing. Some Congolese are discouraged by the lack of relief for the people of Rutshuru and Masisi who are languishing in camps for the internally displaced. For Emmanuel Muhozi, a member of parliament, issues of national life have been dealt with half-heartedly. He says his thirst wasn't quenched because he wanted to follow the speech to hear the head of state talk about the fate of the population in the territories of Rutshuru and Masisi. They will not be taking part in the elections because of the war, and part of them live in the displaced persons camp around Goma. For him, the fact that the president has not made a statement on the subject is a cause for despair. This speech comes at a time of turmoil in the eastern Congo. Several groups in the territories of Rutshuru and Masisi have so far been excluded from the electoral process following their occupation by the rebel M23. The address was the last for the first 5-year term of Felix Antoine Tshisekedi, who is running for re-election in the December 2023. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Neti Zaidi in Goma.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.